AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Football on Off the Ball.
I'm really excited to see Jessu back on the pitch. I think she was one of the most exciting, creative players that we had on the pitch in terms of creating opportunities.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in Mike Hankey, and I suppose they're good at football. They just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12. I love playing 10. I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
Oh, no.
Thank you for all the supporters. Thank you for the team. Thank you, France. Merci la France. Merci les baguettes. Merci les croissants. Je vous aime. I love you.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Word on the Street. If you don't know the crack by now, we are a podcast where every week we take a sporting topic, something that's dominating the headlines, and we take it to the public. And I am Susanna, and I'm here with Eve and Rachel. How are we, gals?
How are we? What's going on?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm all good.
Feeling happy. Ireland team's been announced. I feel like I can't show my prejudice on air, but I'm happy with the selection situation. Are you, Rachel?
All I heard when I came in was Crowley. So
actually, Crowley.
I haven't seen the rest of it. I'm just having a look at it there now.
That was the first thing that Brona sent into our chat is Crowley is starting. Full stop.
They're playing New Zealand on Saturday.
On Saturday, yeah. 8:15 kickoff, I think, Irish time.
And is it in the Aviva?
No, it's in Chicago.
Oh.
So this is a bit of I won't delve into it here on the pod because there's a bit too much history to dive into, but okay. They've played, I think this is their third time playing there, and they got their first ever win in history against the All Blacks in Chicago.
Well, there we go. That's a good omen then, I guess, for Saturday. Yeah.
It was so funny. I went to the press conference that they had just before they left for Chicago, and they were asking Tadhg Byrne, like, where were you the last time they won? He was like, I was just in the pub with my friends.
You know, it's mental.
Yeah, it's like, oh, now you're like the best player on the pitch, pretty much.
Yeah, we need him to be one of the best players on the pitch. But the whole build up to this and the whole Sam Prendergast versus Jack Crowley rivalry for that Irish 10 jersey kind of got us thinking about rivalries in sport in general. So that is the topic of the week. It is episode 24, and we're calling it Us Versus Them. Very deep.
But also very apt. I don't think you intended this at all, but it's we're leading up to Celtic Rangers, which is this weekend.
No, I knew that.
The Old Firm, as it used to be called, I think now people are supposed to call it the Glasgow Derby, but that's between Celtic and Rangers this coming weekend. And I know that maybe if you're a rugby person, you might know/care about this, but it's probably one of the bigger, certainly the biggest derby in Scottish football, the biggest rivalry in Scottish football. And especially with Martin O'Neill back as the Celtic manager, I think it's going to have more eyes on it than any of their fixtures in kind of
Irish,
recent years.
He
was involved in the Irish national team. He was on. Don't worry. He was on the show a couple of weeks ago, actually, with our very own John Duggan promoting his book. Huh. As somebody goes, I think he didn't realize he had another chapter coming up very, very soon. Like he's 72. Back in management, so fair play.
And do you know, I asked somebody this on the street earlier today, but do you know why that derby is as big as it is?
So for this one, it's just very much on sectarian lines. So Celtic would be classically the Catholic kind of club, and then Rangers, Protestant, very kind of pro-monarchy, I suppose, is the insinuation, or unionist, put it that way. And then it kind of got us thinking, and we wanted to ask the kind of classic question, what are your favourite football derbies? So I got opinions on WhatsApp and from the office.
Nice.
And then from me. And it's what's really funny is that a lot of these football derbies have kind of names that unless you are involved in football, you definitely won't know what they mean.
Okay.
So obviously we have my biggest derby would be the North London Derby, which is between, Susanna will know this. We talked about it today.
Spurs and... No, they're not in London.
Yeah.
Spurs and Arsenal?
It is. Well done.
Nice.
You got in there.
I actually felt really uncomfortable.
No, but you got it.
Thank you.
That is the most stressful derby for me.
For you.
definitely. I've not been to one. My family members have, and it gets really intense. And we're going to hear soon from Tony, who we were talking to today, on the atmosphere there. A WhatsApp from Desmond, who said El Clasico is always a really good shout for the best derby. That would be between Barcelona and Real Madrid.
I have actually watched that one. I used to be a Barcelona fan for no apparent reason.
I always preferred Barcelona over Madrid, but I think that's because I preferred Messi over Ronaldo.
I think it was pure Messi. Yeah. Yes, I agree.
I used to love that era. Of kind of you choose a side and you're very, very loyal to that side.
That's another one, isn't it? Like, another big rivalry. Messi and Ronaldo.
Yeah. They're a funny kind of rivalry because they came into contact playing against each other, obviously, but they never had to fight for a position on a team.
It's so different to Crowley-Pendergast style.
Yeah, it's an interesting one.
And they're all such contrasting characters. Like, Ronaldo is this big ego and this big character, whereas Messi is like very reserved and quiet.
I feel like they more battled it out to be the world's GOAT. Best footballer.
Yeah.
And to have that title and history of I was the best. I am the best.
Yeah.
But yes, we chatted to Tony, and he was an Arsenal fan, was he?
He was.
Yeah, much to your dismay. Mm-hmm. And it was quite amusing, him talking about the atmosphere at those games. So we'll play that little clip from him.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't been witnessing it myself, but from reports anyway, there's definitely some added aggressions between fans at these rivalries, all right.
Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
I think as long as it doesn't spill over outside the pitch, it's a good thing. But yeah, as long as when it adds to the atmosphere, adds to the kind of the way the game's played and kind of the atmosphere around the game, absolutely, it's a great thing.
Sorry, it's actually the next clip from Tony that I thought was amusing, but it's mainly because Eve was standing there. She wasn't part of the interview. I think I was doing that one.
Yeah.
And I asked him who his favourite team is, and he says Arsenal, and we're talking about rivalries. And Eve's just kind of there smirking to herself in the corner.
When life imitates ours, huh?
Yes, it was very funny. So he told us about his kind of favourite rivalry moments between the two teams.
I'm going to ask, what's your favourite North London derby moment? Because from my perspective, it's always that Kane goal where he takes off his mask and goes in front of the crowd to celebrate. But obviously, you're going to have a very different answer to me.
Yeah, I suppose as an Arsenal fan in a North London derby, you don't just have one great moment. You have like kind of many matches where we just kind of slam Tottenham Hotspur over and over again. So that's kind of not one key moment, but kind of it's always a really positive experience.
I set myself up for that, and I have no one to blame but myself. That was horrible.
It was funny. He did it very well.
And it's true. Like, unfortunately, I think we very rarely beat Arsenal, especially at the Emirates at their home ground. We do it more at Tottenham. That goal that I was talking about, if you haven't seen it, look it up. It's Harry Kane with this incredible, like, the angle is so extreme, and he whips it in and it goes in the back of the net. And he was wearing this mask, this face mask. He'd broken his nose or something like that.
Oh, I've seen that.
He goes and whips off. And my uncle was at that game. And it's probably the most jealous I've ever been. Like, I couldn't go because I was only, I think I want to say 11 or 12 years old. And my family were like, we're not bringing you to a North London derby. You're too young. It can get very intense. As Tony said, like, the atmosphere between the fans, as long as it doesn't kind of go spill over into violence outside, you know, we never want to see that. But the atmosphere in the stadium can get very heightened.
Is it proximity that means it's such a rivalry between Arsenal and Tottenham? That's kind of usually the basis of rivalries, isn't it?
Like,
it
tends you've
got to be proximity or
history
or you're both at the same level for so long that you're like Ronaldo, Messi, you're battling over a certain number of things.
Yeah. This is what we asked in the office as well. So obviously, the North London derby between Arsenal and Spurs is location. It's because Arsenal used to be a South London team, moved up to North London, and there was, I think, the hatred spawned from there. El Clasico is kind of you're both really good because Barcelona and Madrid are so far away from each other, so it's not geographical. You have the same thing with Der Klassiker, which is Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund.
Der Klassiker.
There we go. It's way better. And they're just the two best teams in Germany. Whoa, that was good. Then we have stuff like, I always find it funny in...
I'm never going to forget Rachel's face there. She just looked at me in shock.
For those listening on the podcast, Susanna's crying.
I am crying, yeah. Sorry, continuing.
The Dublin derby is usually always thought to be kind of Rovers against Spurs, traditionally, which I find really funny because in the Premier Division this season in Ireland, most games every week are a Dublin derby. There's like five Dublin teams in the league. There's only 10 teams in the league total. So more often than not, you're going to have a Dublin derby. And then you have in the First Division, the Midlands Classico, which is Athlone and Longford.
Okay, we're going too far. We're going too deep. I was going to say, when I was watching you, and I've briefly forgotten his name, but the Arsenal fan that we were chatting to, Tony, I thought it was quite fun and nice that you can both be of two really rival teams, but have a bit of crack and a bit of laugh about it. But as he said, I think the issue lies when it goes too far and the fans become aggressive towards each other because it becomes kind of their whole life. This, not necessarily the rivalry in particular, but supporting their team, and they develop such a hatred for anything that goes against that. And it often that is a rival team because you can direct your hatred at them. But we were chatting to Chris as well, who was from Philadelphia in America. And he was kind of talking about how occasionally that violence can spill over at, I think he was referring to American football games specifically. Yes.
And actually, an interesting story is my uncle is a retired cop and is security at the Philadelphia Eagles stadium. And his job is they put him in the opposing team's jersey and walk him around the stadium. And he has a radio. So as soon as anybody starts messing with him, calls the radio. And then they do try to avoid and quell as much aggressive behavior as they can. But that's just one of the measures that are in place to try to... But... not always, doesn't always work. So it can get a little scary. But I think that happens in a lot of, you know, even with football fans over here. I know the ultras and all that stuff are very, you know, it can be very dangerous. And I've even heard stories of certain cities of, you know, same thing like in Philadelphia, don't go to that city with this opposing supporting shirts on. So.
Full disclosure, it's my first time hearing these clips today because I missed all of our prep this morning.
She's a busy bee.
Busy bee. So yeah, sorry. If the girls are confused at any stage when I'm talking to them, it's because they've already organized to talk about something and I've gone on a complete tangent. But
no, please, we love a crazy
story from Chris's uncle. You wouldn't get away with that in a football game in the Old Firm. Like, you would never get a security guard dressing up, because they wouldn't live to tell the tale, I'd say.
They wouldn't let you in. Well, they wouldn't let you anywhere near. The fans are so separate. I think in American football, when the American football was in Dublin, a lot of kind of fans would go and wear different jerseys, different teams' jerseys, because you're going to watch an American football game, not necessarily you're going to watch the Steelers or whatever. Whereas I suppose in a Philadelphia, when it's your home team, you have to be able to police it a bit better. But it's exactly as you say, it wouldn't even reach that stage in like the Ibrox. They would not. That's where Rangers play.
Yeah,
if a Celtic fan was even within an arse's roar of a Rangers fan, then security's gone wrong somewhere.
Yeah,
like for a few years there, they wouldn't allow away fans at Old Firm games. They had gotten that bad.
Wow.
So yeah.
And is that just in general in football? I know we talked a couple of weeks ago about how it's getting better, but do you think it's particularly heightened in these rival games?
That's a particular one, isn't it?
That's
because
a particular
of its
one,
roots
but
in
I mean,
religious.
I think definitely whenever, I mean, the away fans and home fans are kept away in most football games. You leave at different exits. They try to make sure you do not come into contact with each other as much as possible because emotions can get so heightened. And like, I was able to have a laugh and a chat with Tony there. But if Arsenal were playing Spurs this weekend, I'd be a bit more stressed.
Stressed, you know? Yes. But
yeah.
I don't want to out
you here. I
wouldn't
fight him.
But would you be aggressive towards...
He was way taller than me.
I mean, he did look quite strong. Would he be aggressive? Would you be aggressive towards a Arsenal fan?
I don't have any friends who are Arsenal fans. I don't know if I could.
Okay.
Well, there's Arsenal fans in the office. That's fine. Hi, Owen. I'm friends with you.
Okay. It is interesting, though, the kind of roots situation. Like I was asking, does it heighten with kind of a specific rivalry? I think it does make a difference of where the rivalry stems from in terms of how, not seriously you take it, but how ingrained into you it is. And we asked Chris, kind of, he was saying Philadelphia often has rivalries with like New York teams in multiple sports just because of the cities.
Okay.
And I kind of asked him why that is, and he was quite interesting in his response.
we, you know, we like to watch the people that we don't like lose. So, you know, it's pretty much, we'll root for Philadelphia or root for any of our sports teams. But then if New York is playing a particular team, we'll root for whoever that team is, regardless of where they're from. So, yeah.
And do you know where that rivalry comes from? The specific one with New York? Is there like a history there?
No, I think if you actually think, this might be a little bit deep, but if you think back into the human element, it's always us versus them sort of thing. So it's always our side versus your side, and that can go as far as, you know, one neighborhood against the other, one town against the other, one city against the other, one country against the other. And New York is the biggest city closest to Philadelphia, so I think that is the natural rivalry of, they're the closest one. Also, getting a little inside, New York has all the money and buys all the best players, so anybody who can beat a team who has the most money, that's a win for us.
It's coming back to our conversation that we had during the summer about anyone but the Dubs, really, isn't it?
I was thinking that, and you were talking about Limerick Hurling, I remember, way back, which is another great rivalry. But
And I wouldn't even call that a rivalry. That's just like two good teams playing against each other. Like, if you think of Cork GAA, it's mad. Like, Kerry would obviously be the big football rivals, and even though it pains me to say it, we definitely haven't been on the same level as Kerry for the last number of years. It's almost like anytime Cork play Kerry, they up their game because they're the rivals. Like, you don't want to lose to them. Now, they have been losing to them, but it says so much about a rivalry that in any other way, if two teams at like such different standards are playing, you'd have no interest in it because you're like, Kerry, you're going to win, you know, realistically. Yeah. Like, they're on form, they're All-Ireland champions, but because of the rivalry, you're so invested in it, and it kind of gives you a bit of abandon that like anything can happen here.
Yeah, it is a funny, when he was talking about the kind of us versus them situation and how, and what you said, like, it does give you a bit of a, almost like an excuse to go hell for leather as players, which is, I think, a good thing because it ups your competition. But as fans also, they tend to go a bit hell for leather. And I was looking earlier at kind of the psychology behind sports rivalries. And gosh, it reminded me a lot of, I did a year of sociology in college before I promptly dropped it because I found it incredibly boring. But I do remember studying this, which it's mad the way things come back to you. But it says sports rivalries are deeply rooted in social identity theory, which suggests that people gain self-esteem from being part of a group. Mm. So basically, your team that you support is your in-group and your rival team serves as the out-group. And it creates that clear us versus them dynamic that Chris was talking about with the New York and Philadelphia. And it's a good thing because it strengthens loyalty in your in-group. You always like to feel loyal and feel like you have a home and feel like you have a base. But the problem is, it evokes really intense emotions towards the out-group, ones that you won't feel for kind of any of the other teams floating around the league, but specifically for your rivals. What did it say? It says, identity is tied into this sport and this team. When things go against that identity, it causes reactions that don't always show our best selves. And it says that studies show that fans are more likely to exhibit aggressive behavior towards rival teams or their supporters. Basically, psychologists say that this aggression often stems from de-individuation, which I had to read that word a couple of times to make sure I got it right. But basically, when people in a group setting lose their sense of individual responsibility.
Bit of mob mentality, like.
Yeah. And I think it's mad that, like, you could very much say all this is happening. We see it on a day-to-day. Even the Ryder Cup people lost their sense of that's a different word, de-individuation. They lost their sense of individual responsibility. And because you're part of that, like, group, and you hate the out-group so much, and this is your, like, family and your in-area, you feel like you can do whatever you like.
I feel as well, for players on a team, they need to buy into that as well, the us versus them, because for kind of, just take, for example, the North London Derby. The vast, vast majority of players on either Arsenal's or Tottenham's team won't have grown up in North London just by the nature of how international the Premier League has gotten. So you need to connect with your teammates and say, this is us and we are a team. We're going to go out and we're going to batter them. And to quote Roy Keane, you know, sometimes you need to go out and smash somebody just to make you feel better. You need to make sure that the emotions that the fans feel from geography or history or whatever social reasons why this derby or rivalry has built in, that you're feeding off that to perform as best as you can. And I think that's what's been so fascinating to me, to tie it back to Crowley and Prendergast, that there is no us versus them. It's two men competing for this one position on the team. They're both in the in-group, but it's just trying to sort of get what the other one wants, which is so different. And I'm just glad I'm not one of them, because it sounds very stressful.
Yeah, like, yeah. What makes it so difficult is, like, in all these other things, like, you can go out and target the opposition. But for these two guys, say they did that 2 weeks ago when they played for Leinster and Munster.
Mm.
It's like, I'm going to go out there and play out of my skin. But then they have no control over who's going to win this battle for the Irish 10, because it's down to Farrell, say, and a few small people's decision. So it's so much easier to have a rival in the direct, like, opposition sense of the word, like tennis, you know, or football, where you...
Well, that's the whole thing. Like, in tennis, and it's been noted in a lot of sports, but in tennis specifically, I feel like it makes them better players when they play their rival. I mean, Alcaraz and Sinner have said it all year that, you know, they love playing against each other, and it ups their level of tennis. It's only good for the game because it makes them better and it makes everyone around them better. And even Norrie beat Alcaraz the other day,
player. Oh. Like, Norrie's no bum. He's a good player.
No, he's good. But, like, I feel like you could tell that he felt like it was his rival because he had never beaten him.
Yeah.
But Alcaraz didn't feel like that.
I don't even think about you.
Yeah. Quite literally. And then he's not playing to his potentially best level because he doesn't have that intensity around the game, whereas Norrie really did. And he comes out and wins two sets. Like, but I've completely lost track of where I was going to go there. But
I'd like to bring in a couple comments, actually, just before we move on to
to some
more audio about the Crowdy Prendergast thing. Because we had a lot of engagement on Instagram and Facebook this week, so thank you very much, everybody. But Kian on Instagram said about the Prendergast-Crowley debate, he goes, the whole debate was a farce. Crowley shouldn't have been dropped at any point, and if he was, Frawley was the better option at the time. Throwing Prendergast unmeritocratically...
We're struggling with our words today.
Particularly, it not only damaged Crawley and Frawley, but also Sam, because he wasn't ready and he got a lot of shit for it. It shows Farrell has no interest in picking players based on how well they're actually playing, picked seemingly on a whim. And I thought that was a bit unfair.
Yeah.
And someone instantly responded, and this is what I want to talk about. It's very easy to sit back and question Andy Farrell. You must remember he can see who is clicking in training much more than you can. He's also our most successful coach ever. What I think we're not seeing in this debate is how much goes on behind the scenes that these two still very young men are kind of living it day in, day out, fighting for their space, not only in the matches, so playing for Munster and Leinster respectively, whenever they have an Irish jersey on, but every day at training, every day when they're facing the media, when they're even on their phones. You know, it's such a...
Well, that's been the whole debate. Firstly, in reply to that comment, I think, I don't know if it's through public pressure, we want to say no, because I don't think Andy Farrell gives a crap about what the people think, but he has selected Jack Rowley Tate and he selected Stuart McCloskey at 12 over Bundy, which that's not really a public pressure thing, but it is a case of people are calling for him to make selections based on form, which I'm sure he's always done. As you said, he's the one who sees in training who's performing, but now it does feel like he has made a selection based on form in province, which is, I want to say, new. But I'm sure he feels, I'm sure he has always been doing that. But based on a public perception, it definitely feels like a turning point. But in terms of kind of going back to the tennis, like, that's a rivalry where it only makes you better. I think the whole debate around this situation has been mentally, as you said, it's so tough for these two really young players. Like, Sam's only 22. What did we say Jack was? 26? 25? 26.
Yeah.
And they have to deal with all the mental, like, aspects of noise of the media, which I know a lot of people like to say is the cause of a lot of it, but also just being scrutinized day in, day out about how well you do. And Jack kind of took a dip in form last season. Now, whether that's because of that, as you said, nobody knows, because we're not in their heads. We're not in the training room. We don't know what they're doing every day. But Sam is now having a little bit of dip in his performance. And it's like, maybe the psychological elements they have to deal with day in, day out are having a bigger impact than
because it's not
they would like, I'm sure.
It's not just them being able to say, okay, I can focus on my body, I can focus on my training, I can be the best that I can be, and I'll probably start for Ireland if you're at the level that they're at. Because you have someone who is so directly your rival, which it's maybe we're not seeing it as much in other areas of the picture. It's definitely not as high profile. But we had a voice note in on WhatsApp, just kind of expanding on this whole debate and this rivalry.
The competitive edge that Ireland has created between Crowley and Prendergast is quite a healthy one. I feel like it's a bit of an ace up Ireland's sleeve in terms of the two lads being just kind of a bit different in their playing styles. I feel like Crowley, he brings an aggressive edge, loves taking the ball to the line, defends hard, and kind of has an all-around spark as a 10. And then Prendergast, he's kind of a bit more of a smooth operator. Similar to Finn Russell, has a slick pass and short or long. He's a real good kicking game. He can do any style of kick as well. And he has a good eye for space. So I feel like depending on who Ireland are playing or how the game is going, Ireland can almost just switch gears. I feel like it's a great position to be in. And it's very different, I feel, to like the Rog versus Sexton kind of debate, because the two lads are so young. And I think that's a massive advantage for Ireland as well.
I do think it's slightly ironic. I think he makes very good points. And the whole point of the podcast is that we get public opinions on a topic. That is what we do. But I suppose a lot of the talk around this has been, is all the talk in the media about Sam and Jack detrimental to their mental health? I want to... Cian Prendergast, who is the brother of Sam.
And I didn't know this until today. Yes. I genuinely thought they just happened to have the same surname.
To be fair, there is a few of them in the team who have the same surnames, like Jimmy O'Brien and Tommy O'Brien, but have no relation to each other. So I understand the confusion. But in an interview earlier on in the summer, he said he was asked about Sam and like how that affected their family. And he said he's obviously very protective older brother, which I kind of love. But he said the shitstorm that was made of it was incredibly annoying. It was completely blown over the top. I think certain characters in the media saw it as an easy clickbaity point to just attack the 22-year-old when that's not necessarily the right thing to do. Which obviously I don't think anybody in the professional media world goes out of their way to attack a 22-year-old. But what is different about this era in comparison to, say, Rog and Sexton that they were talking about in the voice note, social media just wasn't as much of a thing back then.
The case in point, this week's topic for the pod, as soon as we put up like a graphic of Crowley and Prendergast, we got so many comments. Like, it's, people want to talk about it because
it's the biggest
exciting.
Story.
It's the biggest story. And I'd have to agree. Like, I think it's good for Irish rugby. You know, they're pitting themselves against each other in hopefully the best way possible. I mean, like, they're elite athletes. They've got sports psychologists. They're not listening to, you know,
us
or like, well, people in the Facebook comments going like, Jesus, I thought you were shit last week for Leinster Sam. Like, he doesn't care about that. Obviously, it comes to a point when
I think they probably do at some stage, because even Crowley was asked about it very recently about how he dealt with it last year. And he was saying, I don't think I dealt with it properly. I think I just knew it was there and ignored it. And then, this is quite interesting, he says, and then as you go, you understand it's part of the nature of the game. It's not just in our sport, it's in every sport. It's in sports that people are madly passionate about. So if you can reframe it and look at it from a point of view of you understanding that it's the passion for the game that people have and the drive for the game that we have here in Ireland. Now that's an incredibly mature response to something that's been brewing for a little over a year now. And he had the whole summer, I'm sure if you've been kind of watching his progress, he spent the summer working on himself physically in terms of an S&C coach, but also massively from a mental point of view. He's been working, so is Craig Casey, with Andrew Conway, who has started a company called 5X Flow, which is basically just all about helping athletes reach their full potential and how do you get into a flow state during a game where you can use all the noise that's around you and all the... He actually says... what did he say? He said, another really interesting flow trigger is spite. Now, this is in a piece not to do with Jack and Sam at all. It was just Andrew Conway explaining his business. And he said, when applied in a healthy dose, spite can be really powerful, not just to prove others wrong, but yourself and those that believe in you. So you can imagine if Crowley's been working with him.
Yeah, case in point, Munster playing Leinster last week after the Irish squad was announced.
Yeah, 100%. And it's like, how do I take this, all this negative energy that's bubbling around, and channel it into an incredible performance? And that's something that it seems like Jack has started to manage to do in the past couple of weeks and after that summer of working on it. it's a case of, like, I know you said they block it all out, and I remember at the Lions press conference at the start of the year, Johnny Sexton was asked about this, and he just goes, I told them to delete social media.
Yeah.
Full stop. Which, like, yes, but things still seep through.
Yeah.
You're still going to get elements of it, noise. And I think it is a case of, how do I mentally learn how to turn this into a positive thing? Which, obviously, Jack is going to say it's a positive thing, but it seems like he has been able to do this season.
Yeah.
Thus far.
Off-piste in terms of rugby, but we were at a live off the ball show last night, and Vinnie Pert was talking about rivalries and the need for them to create like a good atmosphere. Mm. And he was saying that when he was a manager on the line, that he used to love a bit of argy-bargy with the opposition. And but he said, as long as it didn't get personal.
Yeah.
He said, if it was about the game that was happening on the pitch, that was great. But as long as it wasn't getting into like personal lives and everything else, that's where he drew the line.
Yeah.
And maybe that's where the Crowley-Prendergast, because if they're from the same province, you know, I don't know if it would have the same fire.
Yeah, well, that's interesting as well, because we put this up on Facebook, the kind of question of, is it a healthy competition or is it a difficult situation? And the comments, there were 62 comments on that Facebook post, but when I actually went to read them, it was four or five people having a very heated discussion about Munster versus Leinster. Mm-hmm. And obviously I get that that's floating in the background of this argument, but I don't think I quite realised how much of this rivalry between Jack and Sam is not just for an Ireland 10 position, but it's representing a province. And it delves into kind of two provinces that I wouldn't say hate each other. I think that's a bit of a stretch in rugby, but
yeah,
definitely have some issues. Like, I don't know, in the comments they were saying, basically it went from Sam and Jack into which province has the more abusive fans. And then basically that Munster players don't like the Leinster players. And then someone was saying, well, Conor Murray asked Sexton to do the foreword in his new book, so obviously he's really respected. And then they were arguing back and forth. And then it was like, oh, but Tadhg Byrne showed how much he loves to beat the Leinster players by his chats at halftime in the game. I just think it's really interesting that this lies a lot deeper than who gets the Ireland 10 jersey. It's really, I think it's a team rivalry that's been concentrated into two individual players, which has become its own rivalry for the 10 shirt.
To replace one of the best players we've ever had.
Yes.
You know, it was just the perfect storm.
And I suppose as well, what other nations would probably kill to be having the problem we're having? Oh, you have two guys who are both really excellent who can play number 10? Boo-hoo.
Yeah, well, you know, other nations, it doesn't seem to infiltrate in the public as much. It's like New Zealand have like three 10s and South Africa have three at the moment as well, that alternate all the time.
Yeah.
And like someone said earlier in the voice note, depending on the game plan, depending on the opposition, they can use one and use their skill set. But for some reason here, and maybe it does lie in the whole Rog Sexton era of competition and how big that was, that we almost want to pit them against each other rather than just accepting that we could have two really good 10s who might be able to both play in different circumstances. And maybe we don't need to pick one.
Yeah.
Is that your word in the studio?
I think so. I think my word in the studio is also on rivalries in general, that they can be a really good thing for the players. I think in terms of hyping up your competition and making you perform well, I'm not sure they're always a good thing for the fans involved.
I agree. I think it's great for the players. I also think it's great for the fans. Like Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese in the WNBA the last couple of years, they have just brought fame to the sport, you know, internationally, I suppose. Like the fact that I know who they are, and I don't follow basketball very closely. Like, they played against each other in college, they had a massive rivalry there, and then when they got to the WNBA they started playing each other, and there was all of the clip with Angel Reese doing the pointing to her ring finger just before they were going to win. And people couldn't wait for them to take to the floor this year again. So it creates the hype as long as
it stays
as
healthy.
Long as nobody takes the piss.
Yeah.
It's a general That's rule nice. In life, you know?
You could say the same about tennis, I feel like.
Say the same about
Would it have the same hype if we hadn't had Nadal and Federer battling it out for so long? Don't know.
Yeah.
But yes, we are. I can see Brona tapping on her wrist. What is your word on the studio?
My word in the studio is to say a very big thank you to Chris, who was provided two of our audio segments today. He is, as you said, from Philadelphia. He's also in a ska band. and they're called Catbite. They are playing tonight in Lost Lane at 8:30. Yeah. I don't know if I can make it, but I hope if other people want to go and listen to some Philadelphia ska music.
You can find them on Instagram as well if you're curious. But
thank
he
you,
was great. My final word is just backs up my point. Chris on Facebook, he said, toxic rivalry because it's the Irish. Look no further than England or New Zealand to see how they've handled their tens. So maybe it's just Ireland's fault. And that is it. That's our final word. We'll be back next week with more Word on the Street.
They'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah,
I believe in my county, and I suppose they're good at football, they just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12, I love playing 10, I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not. Thank you for all the supporters, thank you for the team, thank you France, merci la France, merci les baguettes, merci les croissants, je vous aime, I love you. Hey!